I tell myself, it's not about comparing. But then I start wondering, what can they lift? Are they adding more weight to their barbell than I am? And suddenly, I'm not training. Then I realize, my journey is not theirs. I've earned every step. So I smile. My smile is the shape resilience takes to keep me moving. To put more smiles out into the world, Colgate has supported female athletes for over 50 years with the Colgate Women's Games, the nation's longest-running indoor track and field series for girls and women. Colgate, your smile is your strength.
Hear that? That's the sound of your skin silently crying out for hydration. Luckily, Dr. Teals has just the thing to get you glowing in no time. Meet Dr. Teals Skin Renewal Deep Hydration, made with a proprietary triple magnesium complex plus skincare actives for 50% improved skin hydration after just one bath. The words dry and dehydrated are about to be wiped from your vocabulary. Find Dr. Teals, all dressed in blue, in your local bath aisle. Dr. Teals. Yep, you needed that.
They say everything happens for a reason, but I suspect everything happens for a reason. Like this commercial break. Did you need 15 seconds away from music? Or 15 seconds to eat a Reese's? Perhaps it's true. Everything happens for a Reese's.
A noisy garage door is a cry for help. Hi, I'm Tommy Mello, owner of Don's Garage Door Service. Most repairs are simple, but if left untreated, they can turn into costly repairs. Your garage door works hard every day, and a little maintenance goes a long way. We fix garage doors fast with quality parts designed to last a lifetime. Over 90,000 five-star reviews don't happen by accident. They happen by putting people first. Fixing your garage doors is what we do. From repairs to upgrades, call Don's Garage Door Service today.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Brian Koberger, we're going to talk about him today because there's news. There's smoke out there in the ether. So let's identify if there's a fire or if it's time to bring out the extinguisher. For University of Idaho students obviously killed in their beds. You probably know the story. The man who admitted to doing it is serving four consecutive life sentences. The families were told it was over, and now a forensic expert hired by Koberger's own defense is going public with claims that the most important physical evidence in the case may have been mishandled. I'm going to underline the word may there. And that he warned the defense before the plea. What's coming out is raising questions that a courtroom was supposed to answer but never really did because, well, they accepted a plea from Brian Koberger. Joining us to have this conversation, as always, my co-host Robin Dreek, retired FBI Special Agent, Chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program with the FBI, and Eric Fattis, a former prosecutor and defense attorney.
The man.
Yeah, kind of a, it's getting some headlines here. Koberger's defense had a forensic expert telling them the knife sheath, allegedly, the only physical evidence carrying his DNA, might have been challengeable at trial. That's the claim that is coming out of this new book anyway, and the former expert. And they took the plea deal anyway. Let's for a moment say, okay, maybe this is a challengeable. Eric, you've been a prosecutor building a case and on evidence like that, and the defense attorney is trying to tear it apart. Does this decision make any sense to you, that if they if this expert had come to Ann Taylor earlier on, or maybe he did come to Ann Taylor, it's, I believe he claims he did, and then Ann says, "Yeah, let's take the plea anyway." What does that say to you about what was going on behind the scenes here?
Sure. So a lot of unknowns, a lot of moving parts there. But, you know, typically as defense counsel, when you're deciding whether to take a plea and to advise your client to do that, you got to look at all of the evidence. So if some expert comes to you and they say, hey, there might be an issue with this piece of evidence, and it's an important piece of evidence, you certainly have to thoroughly consider that. But just the fact that it may be challengeable doesn't mean that you'll prevail on that challenge. It doesn't mean that it proves his innocence necessarily. And I'm wondering if defense counsel looked at that and said, yeah, but look at the substantial weight of all this other evidence. They could try to kill him. And this plea agreement spares his life. On the balance, it's still a good deal for the client. I'm just wondering if that was the analysis of the defense counsel.
Yeah, and that's a good point, too, because it still spares his life. And I remember First of all, I gotta say, I really hate this. We were talking about before the show. I am such a victim's advocate, and the Gonzalveses and all the families that are involved. That shame on these people doing this. But that aside, now, I'm with you, Eric, in the fact that it spared his life, which was on the balance, and at the same time, remember. The police department and the prosecutor, every time Ann Taylor kept coming back and trying to challenge a DNA or the night sheaf and all the motions that she was making, I remember very clearly the prosecution saying, "We're good without it. Do whatever you want." They were so steady with their confidence with what they had, irrespective of this one thing, that I don't get, and that's my question to you, is I don't get why they're trying to make a deal of this now.
Yeah, you know, it's a little bit unclear. I think you mentioned that this assertion is contained within a book from this expert who might have a personal interest in making money off that book and sensationalizing what he believes his opinion was. I think it's extraordinarily unlikely to change things, but you never know what a court might do with that. We haven't seen a motion to withdraw the plea yet, but could we see that? That could be coming down the pike, and there could be a host of new legal issues in this years-long saga.
Is it? And I know, I'm sorry, Tony, you know, I keep doubling up. Is that even a possibility that they can withdraw that plea?
It's a possibility that they could file a motion to try to do that. But doing that is extraordinarily difficult. It is almost never granted, especially after a sentence has been imposed. There are very limited exceptions. But Koberger, what else does he have to lose? He's in prison forever. So wouldn't be surprised if he sort of tries to avail himself of what appears to be a possible last resort.
Especially with the judge kept slapping him down last time, too. Anyway, go ahead.
Well,
Tony.
I mean, this feels like, it feels like it can be dismissed pretty damn quickly. And probably why I'm just guessing here. I'm reading the tea leaves of where this might have went behind the scenes with this being expressed to Ann Taylor before Koberger ever made the plea it has been answered as to, because we're getting down to a chain of custody question. That's the big thing that is being argued here by this expert. And then the other issue is the fact that he's revealing this and Ann Taylor is saying that it's violating a non-disclosure agreement. We'll get to that part too. There's two issues at play, but the part about the chain of custody, that, I mean, I debunked in 3 minutes this morning when I started digging into it. Where, okay, chain of custody, yes, in old school land of evidence, and probably in some departments still to this day, you have your sheet. And everybody logs it. Whoever has anything to do with this piece of evidence, chain of custody, point A to point B, who has it? You sign it, you date it, there you go. The argument that's being made here, so everyone can understand it, is that he's saying he looked at the chain of custody receipt, basically, on the evidence bag for the sheath, and it looked like it was written by the same person with the same pen on the same day, showing a litany of different dates. And in this person's opinion, that person, the author here, or the expert, is saying that, well, that doesn't seem to be right. This looks like not an authentic chain of custody note. This looks like somebody just wrote it all down. Okay, I mean, on its surface, that's kind of interesting, because chain of custody should be differently. But then we find out, oh, the department, they digitally scan everything with barcodes, and it's all tracked digitally far more accurately than someone with a pen and a piece of paper. So that piece of paper, the chain of custody list, could simply have been somebody taking the digital list and then putting it physically on the paper so someone could reference it without going physically into the digital evidence system, which is privately held by the police department. There you go. It's explained. It's not like up in the air for a lot of litigation or questioning. Makes for a great headline, sure, nonetheless. But at the end of the day, feels kind of like a nothing burger to me. I don't know. I mean, this, of course, you know, where could that be litigated? Is that as clear cut as it may feel to me, Eric?
you know, Tony, like you're talking about, it's not uncommon for notations to be made after the fact. Look, as when I was a prosecutor and even as a defense attorney, I tried to take notes contemporaneous with all of my hearings and all of my client communications. Sometimes you're in trial, sometimes there are other pressing matters, and you do it at a later time. You sort of reconstruct what has already happened. And that would not be unusual for a police department to do, especially when they have purportedly a digital record of this stuff being checked in and checked out and handled and that kind of thing. And so I bet Ann Taylor, you know, when she was presented with this, if she was, kind of said, hey, this is not going to make it so that Koberger is found not guilty. There is just so much more going on. And in fact, these apparent notation issues can be explained away through department procedures and through customs and standards. It's not a bombshell to me.
No.
It's not something that shows he's innocent.
And I just don't even like, it's a former FBI guy that got out after 15 years that wrote this book and is bringing this up. First of all, you know, we had Howard Bloom on the show way back when, who wrote the great book and did amazing investigative research on this case. Mm-hmm. You know, again, it was as much behind the scenes as you can get with him. And it was When the Night Comes Falling, I think is what it's called, Tony.
Yeah. Yep.
Fantastic read. And then you have James Patterson and his sources doing this. And then you have this guy coming along. And what bothers me is it's poking at something that was already resolved. It was already flushed out because I mean, we commented on the show numerous times. Well, if you're going to have a defense attorney, and Eric, I'm curious about you this as well. Do you agree, Ann Taylor? I mean, if you need a defense attorney on your side, I want you, I want Bob Motto, or I want Ann Taylor. I mean, holy yeah. crap. I mean, she was flushing this out every single day. I mean, she was doing all she could. And then you get this guy who should be a victim's advocate. You know, and I don't like the what it's doing, potentially doing to the families. I mean, these are strong families. You know, I'm fascinated to see what the Gonsalveses might have to say about this. But I do not like the fact that this was brought up, not because it's, you know, it was something that was righteous that was missed. No, because there's nothing missed. Like, why are they doing this? Anyway.
Yeah, in my appraisal, Ann Taylor was very diligent, very thorough, explored all possible avenues. And when talking about the legal issues of this chain of custody, while those can be issues raised at trial, the burden to admit evidence for chain of custody purposes is very low. It's like essentially an authenticity standard. Is there credible evidence that this item is what it purports to be? And if there are some notation issues regarding it, a judge is probably going to say, hey, you can cross-examine on those notation issues, but I'm letting it in. And I bet Ann Taylor said, gosh, this is coming in either way, and it's going to be damning.
Should Ann Taylor have not written a response to this? Because I'm almost thinking like Ann Taylor responding, and I'm trying to understand why she did, and I think I see why she did, because it almost questions her ability as an attorney of, well, oh my gosh, if this blazing piece of evidence is right here and you didn't act on it and you didn't even give him a chance to argue this in court, what's wrong with you? I can see why one as an attorney would be like, okay, no, this is not what it appears to be or what you're claiming it is. But at the same point, making that statement brought a ton of attention back over here to the case with a book that may probably really, I mean, there's been a lot of Koberger books that have come out. Nobody really pays much attention. They're going to keep coming. They will keep coming forever. I mean, it feels like publicity stunt that we're going to trigger Ann Taylor to have to make this response to defend herself. And then at the same point, that brings us a lot of attention to our book. I don't know. That's kind of my conjecture as I'm looking at this.
It's mine.
Yeah, I hear you, Tony. And you know, I can't speak for Ann Taylor, but speaking for myself and nearly all the attorneys I know, some of them have egos. And some of
sure.
them, you know, when someone challenges you and mm-hmm. your legal work, you know, you went to law school, you have a doctorate, you're proud of what you do.
Yeah.
And when someone calls that into question, I can understand feeling compelled to defend oneself and to defend their work. One of the biggest things on the ethics listserv that I'm on is when someone leaves a bad review, how can the attorney respond? Because they're so giddy to sort of react to those kinds of accusations about their professional ethics and mm-hmm. their professional character. So not surprising that she did this, but I agree that it had an inadvertent consequence of bringing more attention to it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I get why I don't blame her for doing it at all. But yeah, I think the inadvertent consequences there.
Yeah, and I don't think she needed to. I mean, I don't think anyone in the world watching this or witnessing it as deeply as we did, or anyone else that covered it, would say that she was incompetent or missed anything in any way.
No.
I mean, matter of fact, I mean, it was really pretty striking. It was fearful for people that really thought he was guilty before proven in a court of law. I'm not saying I was, but I mean, she did a very, very thorough job. I'm more so than we saw in most cases. Matter of fact, we comment every single case after for a while. I was like, oh, they need to get Ann Taylor.
Yeah. Let's talk about the non-disclosure aspect of this, right? Because that seems to be, I mean, really what brought Ann Taylor to speak about this. They're saying that he violated the non-disclosure, and that still is in effect even after this trial. He's saying, you know what, this is all public information that has been in document. I'm just commenting on it. What are your thoughts on the non-disclosure on a case that's already been, it's been settled. It is settled law. This is all done and over. But yeah, non-disclosures still do exist. But is that the case here? Is he really violating it, or what's your take?
You know, it would depend on the specific language of the non-disclosure agreement, Tony. But one thing I'll mention is that NDAs are rather uncommon in this set of circumstances. So when there is especially a public defender representing somebody, and they consult with an expert, you usually don't make the expert sign an NDA. Now, this case, you know, it has coverage throughout the world. And so perhaps she was just trying to be diligent and thorough as she has been with the NDA piece. But also, like you said, if it is public information, I don't know that you can prevent somebody from simply commenting on public information. You could prevent like secret or private communications from being disclosed. I'm just not so sure there's a lot of traction on this allegation of a violation of an NDA.
And let's talk about that NDA for a second too, Eric, if we could, because I mean, Jim Bob Duggar uses NDAs like they're falling out his butt. And a lot of people, we use them in the FBI, I remember, with confidential human sources a lot. I remember, and I want your legal opinion on this, because we would go to our attorneys sometimes when we gave it to a source that would have them sign an NDA. And our attorneys would say, yeah, it's more of a psychological block from them talking than a legal block, because there's really not a lot of teeth behind them. So can you tell me what exactly the consequences for violating an NDA are and what the law would say about it?
So there are usually two ways that the consequences are handled. One way is within the NDA, and it usually will say, hey, if there's a violation of this NDA, you're going to owe this amount. And if you violate it a second time, you're going to owe a greater amount. Sometimes it's written into the NDA in that fashion. Other times it is not, and that's a little messier, because you've got to talk about what are the damages that result from a violation of this NDA. Did someone lose money because of this disclosure? Probably not. Did someone sustain reputational harm because of this? Possibly. Like, and how do you quantify that? And so I think it just kind of goes to your point, Robin, that these have a psychological compulsion, but not always a legal compulsion.
Are they about as challenging to prove as a defamation case, do you think?
Well, it depends, because in the NDA context, at least you have a written document. You know exactly what the rules are, what you can and cannot say, hopefully. Whereas with defamation, it can be a little murkier. You know, defamation opinions aren't defamation. It has to be a statement of fact. If there's a public official involved, it has to be actual malice. There's all these other conditions. Whereas with the NDA, it's kind of in black and white, hey, what you can and can't do. But the enforceability of that NDA can really become an issue in court.
Thank you.
Lots of questions on this. And I think it's, you know, it's a story that's going to probably come and go here pretty quick. But yeah. It's red meat to the pro burgers out there. The problem with it is it's something that's just one element of a much larger cornucopia of evidence against Brian Koberger. and it's already kind of debunked. So the folks that are looking at this going, see, it's something. It's like, yeah, still really not something. Just because somebody over here says it's something doesn't mean it actually is something. Brian Koberger said he liked to look at the stars for a long time, too, till he said, yes, I killed those four people one after another in a courtroom. So,
yeah. And remember that. And when we're just looking at the case in its entirety anyway, it was they were going to. I remember the police department said this numerous times. The DNA in that knife sheath helped, but it wasn't what gave them everything. And it's a huge piece of it, which was fantastic for the case and the prosecution. But again, they had the car on video. They had his location. They had the cell phone triangulation. And they had DNA before this. You know, anyway.
And you just got Koberger. You look at him for like 5 minutes. You're like, yeah, that's a creepy motherfucker.
His life arc said I was going to do this.
Exactly. Yes. Koberger said he was going to do this.
Because remember, I don't know where it stands right now. The Gonzaleses were following the lawsuit against the university for missing all the red flags and warning signs and not firing them already because of all the creepy crap he was doing to all the students there. I mean, there is a plethora. There's mounds to my visual stuff. There's mounds of crap that says he's guilty, and that's why he pled and admitted it. And now they writing a book around one thing that's a conjecture.
Hey, when there's money to be made, there's people who will go for it. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in, and we'll continue the conversation right there.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
They say everything happens for a reason, but I suspect everything happens for a reason. Like this commercial break. Did you need 15 seconds away from music? Or 15 seconds to eat a Reese's? Perhaps it's true. Everything happens for a reason.
A noisy garage door is a cry for help. Hi, I'm Tommy Mello, owner of Don's Garage Door Service. Most repairs are simple, but if left untreated, they can turn into costly repairs. Your garage door works hard every day, and a little maintenance goes a long way. We fix garage doors fast with quality parts designed to last a lifetime. Over 90,000 five-star reviews don't happen by accident. They happen by putting people first. Fixing your garage doors is what we do. From repairs to upgrades, call Don's Garage Door Service today.
It's said everything happens for a reason, but maybe everything happens for a Reese's. Take noise-canceling headphones. Do they block hearing to heighten taste? That sound seems to show everything happens for a Reese's.
A noisy garage door is a cry for help. Hi, I'm Tommy Mello, owner of Don's Garage Door Service. Most repairs are simple, but if left untreated, they can turn into costly repairs. Your garage door works hard every day, and a little maintenance goes a long way. We fix garage doors fast with quality parts designed to last a lifetime. Over 90,000 five-star reviews don't happen by accident. They happen by putting people first. Fixing your garage doors is what we do. From repairs to upgrades, call Don's Garage Door Service today.
They say everything happens for a reason, but I suspect everything happens for a Reese's. Like this commercial break. Did you need 15 seconds away from music? Or 15 seconds to eat a Reese's? Perhaps it's true. Everything happens for a Reese's.
A noisy garage door is a cry for help. Hi, I'm Tommy Mello, owner of Don's Garage Door Service. Most repairs are simple, but if left untreated, they can turn into costly repairs. Your garage door works hard every day, and a little maintenance goes a long way. We fix garage doors fast with quality parts designed to last a lifetime. Over 90,000 five-star reviews don't happen by accident. They happen by putting people first. Fixing your garage doors is what we do. From repairs to upgrades, call Don's Garage Door Service today.
They say everything happens for a reason, but I suspect everything happens for a Reese's. Like this commercial break. Did you need 15 seconds away from music? Or 15 seconds to eat a Reese's? Perhaps it's true. Everything happens for a Reese's.
A noisy garage door is a cry for help. Hi, I'm Tommy Mello, owner of Don's Garage Door Service. Most repairs are simple, but if left untreated, they can turn into costly repairs. Your garage door works hard every day, and a little maintenance goes a long way. We fix garage doors fast with quality parts designed to last a lifetime. Over 90,000 five-star reviews don't happen by accident. They happen by putting people first. Fixing your garage doors is what we do. From repairs to upgrades, call Don's Garage Door Service today.
They say everything happens for a reason, but I suspect everything happens for a reason. Like this commercial break. Did you need 15 seconds away from music? Or 15 seconds to eat a Reese's? Perhaps it's true. Everything happens for a Reese's.
We're hiring at Don's Garage Doors. No experience, no problem. We provide full training, a brand new van, top-of-the-line tools, a gas card, and steady jobs with weekly pay. This isn't just a job. It's a career with real growth, great pay, and job security. Our team members go from training to six figures, and we're ready to help you do the same. Don't wait. Apply now at donsgaragedoors.com.
It's said everything happens for a reason, but maybe everything happens for a Reese's. Take noise-canceling headphones. Do they block hearing to heighten taste? That sound seems to show everything happens for a Reese's.
A noisy garage door is a cry for help. Hi, I'm Tommy Mello, owner of Don's Garage Door Service. Most repairs are simple, but if left untreated, they can turn into costly repairs. Your garage door works hard every day, and a little maintenance goes a long way. We fix garage doors fast with quality parts designed to last a lifetime. Over 90,000 five-star reviews don't happen by accident. They happen by putting people first. Fixing your garage doors is what we do. From repairs to upgrades, call Don's Garage Door Service today.
Eczema's unrelenting itch and rash. If you know the feeling, you should know the facts. The eczema medication you're taking may not be right for you. Visit MyRawTruth.com and talk to your dermatologist about your symptoms and treatment options.
If you want something done right, you do it yourself. That's why you change your own oil. You wouldn't trust your engine to just anybody. So go with the full synthetic motor oil you can trust. Pennzoil Ultra Platinum offers engine protection for the lifetime of your vehicle. So do it right with Pennzoil Ultra Platinum. Stock up now at Walmart. Pennzoil. Long may we drive. Limited lubrication warranty for lifetime engine protection. Other conditions apply, including enrollment and receipt requirements. See Pennzoil.com/warranty for full details and terms.